This programme was previously broadcast live on Love Sport Radio, so some items may be out of date. Phone-in elements of these shows are not available, but if you'd like to comment or give us feedback on our shows, you can tweet us at Love Sport Radio. For more podcasts or to listen live, visit lovesportradio.com. Alternatively, you can find this and other podcasts on iTunes or Spotify using the keyword Love Sport.
It is, of course, the Manchester City Fan Show. Myself, Matt Beadle, here with Nigel Rothband of the Man City Show podcast. Nigel, how are we?
I'm really, considering all that has gone on over this weekend, I think I'm remarkably well.
Thank goodness for that. I've got to tell you, tonight we've had the Arsenal Fan Show.
Yep.
Then we had the Brentford Fan Show. Arsenal, of course, throwing away a two-goal lead against Watford. Brentford losing against Preston. I tell you what, that was a tough show. A great show because they had a lot to talk about, but very difficult because they were quite downbeat. I want to believe that you, despite the defeat to Norwich, are not going to be particularly downbeat.
Well, of course, it's the first time we've lost, is it, since January this year. It's 8 months since we've lost. Mm-hmm. It's not something that happens very often. And, you know, when Pep was questioned in the press conference, you know, that's it, Liverpool's title, we're in September. So much can happen between now and then. Yeah, it's not a great position to be in. We're 5 points behind already. Not kind of been in that position for a while. It feels a bit strange. But you know what? A lot of games to play. A lot of football to be seen. Still feel very confident. We've got a great squad. We've got depth. We've got Pep in charge. We've sort of think of last season, was it a hell of a run at the end of the season to come in and actually win that Premier League? So we're disappointed, but we're upbeat. We've got a European game this week. We've got the Carabao Cup the following week. Games are coming thick and fast now. Disappointed, but no, we're cool.
We're cool. Good. We're chilling.
Yeah.
We're all good.
It's early days.
We're just
early
hanging
doors.
Out. Just yeah. hanging out at the Etihad.
Absolutely.
It is all good. You know what? The fact that you mentioned the 5 points adrift, I know it's Saturday. I looked at it and I thought, crikey, because we keep saying this, and this is, I don't know whether this is going to be a unique Premier League and, you know, season after season, I know Sky Sports love to build it up. There's never been a season like it. But this season, we are five games in and you're already seeing three games in. Teams are like, crikey, this is a massive game for us now to get our first win off the board. For Chelsea, it was huge for them to get their first win off the board under Frank Lampard. Now, Man City, I know you said there are plenty of games to go, but Liverpool are like a steam train at the moment, and it is those games between City and Liverpool that we could look at as being hugely crucial.
You look around and you think, who's going to beat Liverpool this season? And it's difficult, isn't it? You know, Norwich, to be fair, had a real good go at them, didn't they, first game of the season? They came out sort of, was it 4-1 loss, but people talked about the way they played the game.
12 shots, I believe they had.
Exactly, all of that. So we've got a fight on our hands. Yeah, we had a fight on our hands last season. And Liverpool have got stronger. And people have argued with Kompany, who's now gone, of course, the injury to Laporte, and then the performance of our back four in a game like that at Norwich starts to raise some questions. You know, are we any stronger? So we've definitely got a fight on our hands this season, no question.
Well, we can't escape it. It's the elephant in the room. Norwich City on Saturday evening. You just mentioned it there. Aymeric Laporte, of course, out for around 6 months with his knee injury. Frailties were exposed at the back, it's fair to say. John Stones, Nicolas Otamendi. We saw the error, of course, for the third and final goal scored by Timo Pukki. I mean, your opinion at the moment on Man City's defence?
Well, let's just go through that. Laporte was kind of probably one of the first names on the team sheet, I think, if you ask Pep. Mm-hmm. It's a big blow. I mentioned the fact that Kompany's gone. There's nothing we can do about that. We couldn't afford Maguire, of course. He was far too expensive. When Pep was asked questions, he was out of our budget, I'm afraid, so we couldn't go for him.
Which, as an aside note, is I think there's a lot of chat about budgets and money when it comes to Man City, but we saw it with Alexis Sanchez and we saw it with Harry Maguire. Absolutely not. We are not prepared to pay that kind of cash.
Yeah, listen, I'm obviously joking when I say that's what Pep said, but I think a lot of people, a lot of the neutrals will say, actually, good on City. You know, they've stuck to their principles. Yeah, they're a very rich club, sort of very deep pockets, but in those situations we have a price on a player and we're only willing to go up to a certain figure, and that was the situation with Maguire. So he went by the wayside. So at the moment we are left with John Stones, who's coming back from injury, is short of playing time. Otamendi, and that, if you like, that's our third and fourth choice back, you know, central defenders. And you would have thought, with the quality they have, I mean, John Stones, you know, England international, not a bad player. You would hope that we'd have enough in that team to beat a Norwich City. And you know, I don't want to move on from the defence too quickly, but if you think about what happened in that game and the amount of possession we had, the amount of shots we had, the amount of corners we had, you could argue that actually with our front two or three not on firing on all cylinders was probably more of a reason why we lost that game than actually the back four. You know, we the possession stats were ridiculous.
Mm, as they always are when Manchester
exactly.
City play.
And you know, Sterling hit the post and Aguero missed a header. The sort of nine times out of ten you'd expect those to go in. So yeah, there are frailties at the back, but the way City play and the way Pep sets us up is actually we're going to concede goals, but we're always going to score more goals than you. And that didn't happen at the weekend.
It didn't. And I think that's a really interesting point, Nigel, because we discussed this earlier on the station and there is an argument here to suggest, really, that Pep almost not got what was coming to him, but he has constantly bleated out the line of, you know, I want teams to play against us in the way that we play. Brighton tried it, didn't work out for them. They got hammered 4-0. But Norwich City did come out, and it's almost like Pep got what he asked for, and he did get the defeat.
Listen, you've got to give credit to Norwich City, absolutely no question. I thought it was good also to see Pep, first defeat for a long time. He was on that pitch, he shook hands with every single Norwich City player, made a point of it. And in the press conference too, he said they've played well, you know, and they did. There's no denying it. I think you've got to give them some credit, absolutely.
Let's look at the positives, shall we? Rodri, first goal for the club. Sergio Aguero. Now, I know this is a really basic conversation to have just about how good he is, but how good, I mean, this is a guy you see week in, week out. How good is Sergio Aguero, the first player for Man City to score in the first five games of the season in the Premier League?
Manchester City's record goal scorer as well, of course, on top of that. Mm-hmm. You know, you look at his goals to time on pitch ratio and it beats all the records. And people said, of course, when Pep arrived, he's not Pep's type of player. And there were issues, you may remember, when he first started as well. Is he working hard enough? You've got to give him credit. He is, you know, he's in the autumn of his career and he's still knocking them in. And, one could argue, you know, is he the best Premier League striker ever? People always talk about Alan Shearer, Thierry Henry, one or two others who I can't mention because they come from a team sort of down the road. But he's absolutely up there and he's a City legend. You know, we just have to think about the QPR game and the Aguero moment. And there are so many things, and they've talked about a statue for Vincent Kompany. There is no question that ultimately sitting alongside that will be a statue to Sergio Aguero as well. And I suspect, you know, David Silva's will not be far behind. So, you know, we're going to have those three, aren't we, sitting there together. There's absolutely no question that's all being planned as we speak. He's absolutely superb. And I'm particular, I'll go back to what I said at the start, Matt, that we've got this situation where he was written off by so many people. Gabriel Jesus was brought to as his replacement. Everybody said, you know, he'll be on the bench, Aguero, and Jesus will get... Nah, it's not been that way. It's Jesus still playing second fiddle to Aguero, who's absolutely phenomenal. And potentially, I would still argue, the best striker the Premier League has ever seen.
Yeah, and that is a great point as well, because you're right. I think there is this obsession with the mid to late 90s strikers, because the Premier League was new there. And listen, let's not forget that football did exist before 1992 as well. That's often an argument that comes up and everyone says he's only scored that many goals in the Premier League. Yeah, but he scored about 100 in the First Division when it was the First Division. But there is this obsession with, like you said, the Colly Moores, the Ian Wrights, the Robbie Fowlers. I won't mention the names that you don't want me to mention, of course. But there is this obsession with those players, and current strikers don't seem to be put into that pantheon of greats. And Sergio Aguero absolutely is one of them. And when you talk about the fact that Jesus did come in and there were those problems under Pep Guardiola, it looks like maybe Sergio Aguero could be leaving Man City. He adjusted his game. He worked the way Pep wanted him to work. There was an argument as well. I can't remember the game. You probably do, where people suggested it was almost like a passing of the baton where he was through on goal and he squared it to Jesus to have an open goal. And everyone said, there you go, there's the acceptance of the new striker at Man City. But Aguero's just carried on in his same vein.
And we had a situation this season, you'll remember as well, where he was substituted and he remonstrated with the manager and they ended up having a cuddle as well at the end. So he's got the passion there as well. He's still got the commitment and the passion, and people criticised Aguero for that. I'm sure in the dressing room afterwards Pep would have taken him on one side and said, look, you know, in public that's probably not the best thing to do. But it showed that he has the passion, he has the commitment for Manchester City, and I haven't got a problem seeing that actually, and I suspect Pep doesn't either. He wants a bit of fight. it. He wants to see that passion, and probably should have seen a bit more of that on Saturday.
Yeah, a family man too. Rarely in any kind of headline, apart from when perhaps he comes up against David Luiz on a couple of occasions. But yeah, a great player for Man City. And moving on to another great player is Kevin De Bruyne. I want to touch on Pep Guardiola here and just as to whether he was culpable for the defeat, because Kevin De Bruyne was obviously left on the bench, a player who, in my predictions at the start of the season, when we all get our sheets and we do it with work colleagues and friends and we pick out golden boot winners and title winners and those relegations, player of the year for me, I predicted Kevin De Bruyne.
Listen, a magnificent footballer. Reminds me, actually, we talk about sort of football did happen before the Premier League. I go back to the great Colin Bell days, who is still my hero at Manchester City, giving my age away a little bit there. and I think we have to understand, of course, and you will understand, and the listeners will understand, the fact that we've got games coming thick and fast now. And Kevin De Bruyne is just returning from an injury, of course. And if Kevin De Bruyne had started that game and, say, got injured, meant he's, I know we're going to come on to Shakhtar later on, so he's not available for Shakhtar, he's not available for the league game. We've then got the Carabao Cup the following week and then another league game against Everton. So games are coming thick and fast. He will have to rotate his players. And I suspect that Pep saw a situation there where if he could rest him, you know, he's got Rodri in midfield, he's got Gundogan, who he likes, he was his first ever signing and clearly likes him and he plays him quite regularly and, okay, didn't have his best game ever. You know, you've got Bernardo Silva and his dad David Silva. So, you know, you've got a reasonable number of players sitting there in midfield. You know, it's not the worst lineup you've ever seen.
No.
So I can understand why he did it. It was about rotation. With hindsight, it's a wonderful thing, isn't it? Who would have predicted we were going to, you know, leak three goals and lose 3-2. Nobody predicted that. So I understand what you're saying, and looking back on it, would it be different if KDB had started? Yeah, but if KDB had got that injury, we also would be sitting there saying, why did he risk him in a game like Norwich? He could have rested him. So it does work both ways, Matt, I guess.
A reasoned approach, Nigel. A good argument to put
always
forward. And of course,
always.
I would expect nothing less.
Absolutely.
The games are coming thick and fast. We are going to be discussing the Shakhtar, the next class, of course, Champions League football beginning this week next.
Love Sport Radio, the station giving fans a voice.
This is Love Sport. I am Matt Beadle and you are listening to the Manchester City Fan Show with Nigel Rothman of the Man City Show podcast. Now, before we move on, we've dissected Norwich. That's in the past, as far as I'm concerned. It's gone. It's forgotten. We are going to move on to your fine self, Mr. Rothman, because this is our first meeting.
Of course,
we were supposed to meet last week, but I unfortunately was otherwise engaged with things we're not going to talk about on this show right now. Mm. I'd like to know about the Man City Show. I'd like to know about you. You've been a Manchester City fan for a very, very long time, I believe.
If I tell you my first game was 1964,
wow!
I was a very small child, Northampton Town at home, at the old main road, and I've been through thick and thin, as you can imagine, going back that far. My father, I get it from him, massive Man City fan, still a Man City fan today. He will be 100 years old next birthday, all being well, still supporting City. Doesn't go still, to be fair.
Going to hit the big ton.
If he's all being well, next year, that is going to be awesome. So he is still a fanatic City fan. The whole family are, to be fair. Season card holder. Don't get to all the away games, but certainly go to the vast majority of the home games. Absolutely love City, and what's fantastic is having been a supporter to get the opportunity 7 years ago. I went on as a guest to the Man City Show podcast, which we do weekly. We actually record on a Monday night, and you can find it the usual places, Acast and iTunes, and we've got our own. You can download our app as well, so the Man City Show, and we're on Twitter at City Podcast, so you can follow us in all these different places. And I was invited as a guest, actually. And at the time, Nicky Summerby was
of
hosting
course.
It with some other guys. Mike Pickering, for example, who you might know. Kevin Cummins, who's a famous photographer. And those guys, Nicky actually then moved abroad. And they approached me and said, you've been a guest, would you like to host it? And I kind of had to pinch myself thinking this is like, you know, a dream come true. So that was 7 years ago. So I've been doing it every week for 7 years. And we've got a great bunch of guys who come in. And it's, you know, like three or four guys or gals sitting around a table talking about our passion, and someone happens to record it and it goes out there every week. And listen, it's great fun.
Absolutely. Nicky Summerby, by the way, a good player in his day. And a great stat on Nicky Summerby. I'm sure you already know this, but it's one that always crops up whenever there's a hard shot in a game, because he was on record breakers around 1994.
Go on.
And they brought him in as the professional footballer to test his ability to kick the ball really hard. And they thought they could break a record. I think he hit it something like 88 miles per hour. It was like a ball into a really tiny net from about 2 yards, and he smashed it. I think it was at the time he was playing for Swindon, I believe.
Yeah, that could well be right.
And it was then not recognised by Guinness because it wasn't in a professional football match. So now whenever there's a goal, Richie Humphreys, I think, scored one in his first game for Sheffield Wednesday that was like 96 miles an hour. David Hurst, the old Sheffield Wednesday Southampton striker, he whacked one in about 100 miles per hour. I think it belongs to like some random Brazilian who rocketed one in at like 106 miles per hour. But Nicky Summerby is always brought up when that conversation starts.
Can I just say, because you know how far I go back, Nicky Summerby was a fine player, but not fit to lace his father's boots, I'm afraid. Mike Summerby was one of the greats. You know, you talk about, we talked earlier on about Silva and Aguero and company. You know, we go back as far as Bell Lee and Summerby, of course, and that's Nicky's dad, Mike Summerby, mm-hmm. who in the late 60s and early 70s was a City legend. So, good player, but nothing like his dad, Mike. Sorry to go back. We're in black and white now, by the way.
Well, I mean, that's the interesting point, isn't it? Because I think fans of old, of Manchester City, like yourself, you said your first game was 1964. You have been through thick and thin. I worked for Wycombe Wanderers for quite a while. So I was there in the 98-99 season when Wycombe Wanderers did the double over Manchester City when you were in what was then League One. You eventually came back and obviously won the playoffs in that epic game with Gillingham. But it's been so up and down, and you've pretty much seen it all.
I was there at the Gillingham game. I was there for the Aguero goal against QPR. You know, York City away. I've done it all, and you know, it's just I have to say, with all that we've been through, to have Pep Guardiola as our coach, having the world class talent we have, it is a joy to behold. Some weeks I sit there and I'm gasping out loud the sort of football that we played. Okay, not against Norwich. Oh, we've moved on, haven't we? So I do sit there and I absolutely am gasping in admiration at some of the football we're playing. It's magical. It's wonderful.
Well, that's awesome. And another man I would imagine is also gasping. It's Paul Denby, who is on the line now. He is joining us to discuss that game with Shakhtar Donetsk this week. Of course, that's on Wednesday night. The Champions League begins again. Paul, thanks for joining us.
Good evening. Hi.
How are you?
I'm good. How are you doing?
Yeah, very well. Thank you. I'm here with Nigel Rothband. Of course, we're looking ahead to this game with Shakhtar. What are your thoughts in terms of bouncing back from that Norwich game?
Well, we've got a bit of history with Shakhtar. We've played them a couple of seasons on the run, so I think we're getting a bit bored with playing them. They're probably even more bored with being drawn against us, to be quite honest. Although, you never know. They're one of these teams from Eastern Europe that we don't know a lot about, but I have just checked up. They've got a great start for their season. They've won 7 out of 7, so they're obviously top of their league and doing rather well. So I don't know a lot about them, but we should beat them. But if we play like we played against Norwich at the weekend, we could lose. It really was a terrible performance at the weekend.
So with that in mind, Paul, I mean, obviously there's two ways this could go. It could well be that our confidence is knocked, we are struggling, we've got a back four that aren't performing, or it could well be the shot in the arm we need and we go out there and we absolutely muller them. Your thoughts on the sort of the City that might turn up against them?
If I had my hat on from many, many years ago, I'd say the hat would be the one that we lose again. But having watched this team and know how they can recover and Pep, what he will have instilled in them after that performance on Saturday night, I like to think we're going over to Ukraine and we're going to just turn them over. Like we did last season, we won 3-0 quite comfortably eventually. So I'd like to think we'll do the same. But I've got a niggling doubt about our defence at the moment. I'd like to think he's going to make some changes. I'd like to see Otamendi had a terrible game, so did Zinchenko, but there again, so did probably about two-thirds of the rest of the team. He needs to make some changes to freshen it up and just get some of those fringe players into the team. I'd love to see Fernandinho back in there. Not that Rodri had a bad game, I thought he was one of our better players, but I just think we need something different there for Wednesday night.
So that I was going to go and ask you all about that, actually. So let's just explore that for a second, if we can. So in terms of a lineup, bearing in mind we've obviously got Watford at the weekend, then we've got the Carabao Cup against Preston, then another league game, I think it's Everton the following week. So we were saying earlier these games are coming thick and fast. What sort of changes do you expect? Because he's not going to blood the Stockport Iniesta, is he? Phil Foden's not going to start. I don't think Cancelo's necessarily going to start in this game. Mendy's not ready yet. So what sort of changes do you think he will actually make? So let's talk about some of the personnel for us.
Well, you know, Foden won't start. He's not even travelled, I believe. I think he's got a niggling little injury at the moment. I would like to see Cancelo play. I really would. I think he must be ready to play a game by now. He's had a few minutes on the pitch. Why not? I'm not saying Walker's been any worse than any other players, but just freshen it up a bit. So I'd like to see Cancelo play, whether it's on the right. I believe he can play left back as well.
Yeah, I think he can.
Zinchenko had a stinker at the weekend. I thought he was playing for Norwich City at first. So I would like to see Cancelo start. De Bruyne's got to start. I don't understand why he didn't play him at the weekend, unless he was shattered from his Belgium exploits in midweek. So you've got to look at playing as strong as possible team. We've got to be winning these games and get ourselves off to a good start. Last year, we lost our Champions League game, but managed to recover it. But I just want to get the points in the bag.
I mean, you'd like to think this is a group we should win, of course, or certainly qualify. The ubiquitous question then about City in the Champions League then for you, Paul. The owners, I suspect, will be saying, actually, Pep, the Champions League is the one that we want now, and we need to win this at some time soon. And this season seems like a good idea. The fans may have a different view, which might well be, actually, let's dominate our domestic league. Let's win three Premier League titles on the trot and join an elite group. Your thoughts on that? Do you think there is some mounting pressure on Pep to win it this year?
I think there is pressure on him to win it. I don't think it's if he didn't win it that they'd get rid of him by any means. I think he's a brilliant manager. What I would be upset with this season is if we went out to a team that we shouldn't go out to. I don't mind losing to a brilliant team. If that is cup football, you can do that. Last season, of course, we lost to Tottenham in unfortunate circumstances on away goals. A couple of seasons ago, we lost to Monaco as well on away goals. I don't mind if we get beaten by a top class European team on aggregate, but we've lost those two games on away goals. We've got to finish top of this group. We can't afford to finish runners-up, because then you've got more chance of playing one of the bigger teams in the next round. I just think we've got to win the group and hopefully win it with a couple of games to spare, or at least one game to spare.
Paul, I'd like to ask you how important it is to you for Manchester City to win the Champions League, because the Premier League is there. Nigel just mentioned that three in a row, that coveted three in a row. The FA Cup has been won, the League Cup has been won. How important is it for you, for Manchester City, to win and be triumphant in Europe?
For me personally, I've had very mixed feelings over the years. I will answer your question in a second. The last two or three seasons, I've always wanted to win the Premier League. It sounds very... I don't like to sound like certain fans might have done in the past, but we have won the Premier League now. I would like to win the Champions League. And I know there are fans out there that say, no, the Premier League is the be-all and end-all. And I do understand that, and I do agree with it. But I still would like to get our name on that Champions League trophy, just once in my lifetime. So, yes, I'd love to win it.
Great. Paul, thank you very much for joining us.
No problem. Thanks.
That was City fan Paul Denby. Your thoughts on that last question, Nigel, because I'm not a fan of the Champions League. I'm very much all about the Premier League, the bread and butter. I think bragging rights over your local rivals, bragging rights over those in your country is so much more important. And the reason that I'm not so much a fan of the Champions League now is you may already be able to tell, a bit of a traditionalist when it comes to football. And it's not the Champions League, because you've got four teams from one country in the Champions League. It's the reason why, you know, Liverpool fans bleat on about the fact that they won seven European Cups, however many it is, six European Cups. I can't even remember now, because they're always talking about it. But before the Champions League, I only consider the titles that they won to be valid, because on the other two occasions, they finished fourth.
Absolutely. No, I agree. And I think for me, I think to answer my own question, dominating the Premier League, get three back-to-back titles for me is far more important. And the thing about the Champions League is it's a knockout tournament, and anything can happen. You know, we can talk about Spurs if you want, you know, in terms of VAR. All sorts of things can happen. And for me, People will still say it's the monkey, you know, that we need to get off our back. But I would love us to win the Premier League again this year and talk about three titles and really, really dominate the Premier League. That for me would be more than anything else.
Before we move on, I just want to very, very, very quickly...
You're not going to talk about Norwich, are you?
Sorry, not going to talk about Norwich. But
That has gone, hasn't it?
That's definitely gone. Yeah, that's out of the window. We're not going to talk about Norwich City on Saturday evening at Carrow Road. No, we're not going to talk about it.
3-2, wasn't it?
I believe it was 3-2, yeah. But we are going to hark back slightly to another game that you probably don't want to talk about, that you just mentioned, the Spurs game, very, very quickly, because I never really spoke to a Manchester City fan about this. But that VAR incident and that handball from Llorente, right? That sort of got lost in the drama of what happened. But it was a clear handball, right? And there was a massive error that the VAR officials didn't seem to see the replay that we all saw when it clearly hit his elbow.
You don't listen to my show, do you?
I haven't listened to it yet. Do you know what? As I was saying that, I thought, I bet they've discussed this on the Man City Show podcast.
All the time. I have a view on VAR.
Brilliant. I'm sure we share the same view.
Yeah. And I said it, and to be fair, I've said this, Matt, before even VAR was brought in.
Mm-hmm, me too.
I am not a fan.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it works in cricket. Great. Cricket isn't football. They stop after every delivery. I play cricket as well. The bowler goes back to his mark. The batsman takes his guard again. The fielders go back to the position. It's different in football. And the only way VAR is going to work is if you forensically investigate every single decision all of the time. So you have that consistency and we don't get anything wrong. And that's not going to happen. That can't happen. So we're going to have a situation which we've now got, where we've got people spending more time now talking about the VAR decisions that we got wrong or the VAR decisions that weren't reviewed than what happened originally. We should just get on with it. We've got four or five referees out there already. Let them get on with it. Players make mistakes. Referees make mistakes. I think it is going to ruin our game. I said it before it even came in, and I'm even more convinced of it now.
Where have you been all my life, Nigel Rothband?
I love you, Matt.
I need support on this studio because I have this argument all the live long day. It drives me mad. In football, VAR cannot work. I think we are going to discuss this on another note. Let's move on. I don't want us to get too hot-headed. We did that in the first section. Very excited about what we've got coming up. We're going to be speaking to City fan Mr. Stato, Roger Reed.
We've all got one, and we're not afraid to put it on display. Our opinions, that is. Share yours now at Love Sport Radio on Twitter or call us 0208 70 20 558. Love Sport Radio, your fan station.
This is Love Sport Radio. I am Matt Beadle and you are listening to the Manchester City Fan Show. Myself here with Nigel Rothband of the Man City Show podcast. All going well, Nigel?
I think so. Yeah, we've moved on, haven't we? So it's all fine. We're looking forward to Wednesday and then the weekend, and we've moved on. We're fine.
We've moved on. We have discussed Norwich.
We've moved on.
Sorry. I thought you were going to start Shakhtar Donetsk. We have moved on. I'm delighted now to say that we are joined by City fan Roger Reed, who I'm told is a treasure trove of tales. I'm looking forward to hearing many of them. Roger, how are you doing?
I'm very well indeed, Matt. Good to talk to you.
Yeah, good to talk to you indeed. I guess I can give you the floor. Talk to me a bit about your history and how long you've been involved in football and Manchester City.
I've got a feeling you've asked me to talk because I'm so old now. My first game, I beat Nige by a year. My first game as a supporter following City was in 1963 when the opposition was Swansea Town. They weren't even called Swansea City in those days. Swansea was only a small town in those days, so it was Swansea Town we played. And I was fortunate enough to get the chance to work at Main Road in the old days, in the 70s and 1980s. The managers I worked with there were Tony Book and then later Billy McNeil, and they were absolutely brilliant. They were a joy to work with, they really were. And I've followed the club, you know, in Europe during the 70s and 80s. I was very privileged and very lucky. I've been involved in one or two things to do with the club as well, like the Junior Blues Club, like match sponsorship, the very first match sponsorship. I played a very small part alongside a team promoting match day sponsorship for the first time at Main Road. And also, when I left City, I actually worked for Football in the Community, who were one of the pioneering agencies that developed women's football. So we actually played a part in setting up the women's team at Manchester City over 30 years ago. So I consider myself very, very lucky, Matt.
I think you've been very modest, Roger, as you always are, of course, in these things. And something that I think most City fans of our age and our era will remember, and something that you were a key part of, and something that you really were pioneering, and was indeed a pioneering club, of course, with the Junior Blues in those days. Not everybody may well remember or even know who they are or what it stood for, but certainly we both know what a pioneering initiative it was. And, of course, it set the standard for many other clubs, of course, around the world.
Right, Nigel. And it was fantastic for me, because I've just got so much enthusiasm for City and for football. To be involved with young supporters under the age of 18 was a brilliant thing for me. I'll just tell you a very quick story. One of the things that we did, we actually got to a point where we got 7,000 or 8,000 members of the Junior Blues at one point from all around the world, I hasten to add. One of the things that was in fashion in the late 1970s was we used to get fathers ringing from the maternity wards to say, my wife's just given birth to a young baby called Stephen, can we enrol him in the Junior Blues? and of course we would enrol him there and then, so he would instantly become the youngest Junior Blue. And the youngest supporter of Manchester City. But there was one incident where a chap rang up and he said, I'm just ringing you from Withington Hospital. I'd like to enrol my child in the Junior Blues, so he's the youngest member. And we said, yeah, sure. He said, can you hang on a minute? She's not given birth yet.
That's brilliant, Roger, and it's great that you were obviously a pioneer for that. I spoke to Nigel a bit about the fact that he's come through the ages at Manchester City. For you, it's obviously been the same. Just, I don't know, tell us some of your favourite moments while supporting City, things that have really stuck out for you through the ages.
Well, I mean, you've got to remember that we've had thick and thin, and I think in my lifetime it's been a lot of thin, really. We had the fabulous era under Joe Mercer and Malcolm Allison in the late 60s and early 70s, of course. And we were so lucky, because when you look at the number of City players that have gone on to make 300 or 400 appearances, we had most of them playing in that era. You know, Alan Oakes, Glyn Pardo, Francis Lee, Mike Summerby, Colin Bell, Joe Corrigan, Mike Doyle, Tony Book, they all played as part of the same team. So we were lucky to get them all together at the same time. And we were lucky, obviously, to witness them winning all those trophies. Then there was the very thin era. And we've just come into a little bit of thickness again, obviously, since the takeover. And we've got that same sort of loyalty from players, where now we've got people like, obviously, Vinnie Kompany has just finished with, I think it's around 350 appearances for City. We've got Sergio, who's done 300-plus. David Silva, who's done 380-plus or whatever it is. You know, these are quality players who stayed loyal to City during a period of success, because we've been so brilliant during this particular era. But when you look back, we've had eras over the years. I mean, my dad used to tell me about the 50s and the team that won the Cup in 1956. Again, there were players like Ken Barnes, Dave Ewing, Roy Clark, Bert Troutman. They all made sort of 300-plus appearances for City. And I think it's that consistency of team selection that gives you the chance and the platform to be a bit more successful. So we've had three great eras, really, in recent years, which were the 50s, the 60s and 70s, and the present-day era.
And that brings me on quite nicely, Rog, to that question that people are often asked. People of your era, of your age, if I can say that. You started it by saying you're the oldest person we've ever had on this show, I think, and likely to have. In terms of those eras and kind of comparing the two, and I know you can't compare the two, but we're going to do it anyway. So if you could, and you've had the benefit of seeing and enjoying both of those, kind of the current crop under Pep, or that magnificent team under Mercer with Alisson at his side, which of those do you think is the better team? I know it's an impossible question to answer, but give it a go.
Well, the interesting thing with the present era is that it's not finished yet, or we'd like to think it's not finished yet. You know, you were talking earlier about the Champions League and whether that is a realistic possibility for us. I think if the era continues and City can win more trophies this season and maybe even next season, then there is no question in my mind that this era is the most successful Manchester City team of all time. Then you come down to looking at individuals, and I'm with you, Nige. My big hero is Colin Bell. And I seem to remember saying to you, a year or so ago on the podcast that David Silva is pushing him very closely now, you know, because he's just as good. And he's done almost as many appearances as Colin now as well. So, you know, they're fantastic individual players, but as part of the team, that's why the team has had those successful eras.
Can I talk about football in more general as well, Rog? As well, I'm just interested because you have fantastic insight. You're someone who's worked in football all your life. I think, again, you're modest. I think you were the youngest secretary in the Football League at one point as well.
I was seven.
in your early 20s, you know, you've been there at a football club doing transfers, seeing it on a day-to-day basis. You've also done a lot of work with football in the communities, you say, as well. We talked earlier with Matt about the Premier League, and there was football before the Premier League. Where is it going, Rog? I mean, we talk about players' wages, we talk about all sorts of things. Just from your perspective and with your insight and looking at your crystal ball the next 5-10 years, where will football go? How will it change?
Well, I think the way the game has changed, Nigel, you can see the way it's going, really. From my point of view, we started football in the community where clubs were to try and engage with their communities in the mid-1980s. And attendances at football league matches, as they were then exclusively, were about 16 million for season 1985-6. For last season, when you add up the total of the Premier League and the Football League, it was 32 million. So nearly double in 30 years. That's an incredible rate of growth. And it's partly because of the brand of the Premier League, which is now obviously international. It's partly because the game is being promoted so well. Sky, as a partner, have played their part, I think, in promoting the game so very, very well. The marketing of the game is absolutely fantastic. I think, again, you know, I talked briefly about my limited involvement in promoting the game, the female game. I've got two big sisters, as you know, Nye, so I had feminism rammed down my throat from a very early age, and I understood it. And what I never understood was why, when Sir Norman Chester did his report in the late 60s about we should be encouraging more women to go to games, nobody took up the mantle. So we took the mantle up in the mid-80s, and of course now if you go to games, you will see girls, mums and grandmas at games, and they are enjoying the game, and quite rightly. But they were almost excluded in the 50s and 60s from going to games. So the game is much more inclusive, it's much more diverse, it's much better marketed. Gates are going to go up and up and up. I think the game at Football League level is being promoted very, very well as well. But let's not forget the communities that they represent. We've seen at Bolton and Bury, you know, what happens if you're not there to represent your local community. They have to be able to continue. There should have been a solution worked out for Bury. And I sincerely hope that there will be a solution for Bury in the near future, because the town of Bury is dependent on its football club and vice versa.
Indeed, we do hope there is a solution. Roger, we're going to have to let you go, but it has been nothing but a pleasure. I'm sure we will get you on the show again sometime soon.
Love to be on again, Matt. Yeah, enjoy the football. It's fantastic watching City at the moment.
Absolutely, nice one. Roger Reed, thanks very much for joining us. That was City fan Roger Reed. Some great tales there. I think a name that he quickly mentioned, Bert Trautmann, the keeper. Did you watch the keeper?
Yeah, did I watch the keeper? Absolutely. In fact, I went with Rogers to watch the keeper.
Oh, did
we
you?
Were the only two people in the cinema. It was on the Ardwick Road, I think, midweek, sort of a lunchtime showing. And absolutely. Went to the cinema when it came out. And it was fascinating. And I didn't see him play. I just missed him. But a great story. And for a German prisoner of war, you know, so soon after the war, and there were problems. There were lots of people, and to turn that round. And I talked to my dad about it, because of course he saw him play, and to try and understand what he was able to do, and turn a whole community from hating him to actually loving him and taking him under his wing. It's a great story, a tragic story, of course, as well, because a child died in a road traffic accident and all of that stuff. So it's a great film for any football fan, and it's a great story.
Yeah, I interviewed David Cross, actually, the guy who played Bert Trautman, and it was really interesting to hear his perspective and the fact that there wasn't a lot of footage to study, but he really did study what was there of Bert Trautman and the arching throws, the fact that he nailed that. And he said training to be a goalkeeper was quite tough.
Something that fascinated me, of course, was looking at those grounds. It reminded me when I first went to football, of course, and I waited to watch the credits. And I don't know if you know the answer to this. I thought, where did they film this? Which football grounds? And do you know where it is?
Go on.
It was done in Northern Ireland.
Was it really?
Yeah, it was. So it's all those old-fashioned Northern Ireland grounds, you know, the Glentorans and Cliftonvilles and all of those is actually where it was filmed. So
there you go.
Yeah.
Lovely stuff.
Useful bit of knowledge there, you see.
There you go. See, we never stop with the knowledge on the Manchester City Fan Show here on Love Sport. Next, we're going to be learning all about Watford.
For the fans, by the fans, Love Sport Radio.
This is the Manchester City show on Love Sport. We've got about 8 minutes left to go. It's been a great show thus far. We've covered a game we're not going to talk about. We've covered an upcoming game against Shakhtar Donetsk. It's easy for me to say that one, crikey. We've spoken to Roger Reed, a lovely fan who reflected on his times at Manchester City. Paul Denby, of course, we can't forget as well. But now we're going to look forward to the game against Watford. Delighted to say we've got Andy Lewis from the Hornets Nest podcast on here. Andy, you got back in the game against Arsenal yesterday. The mood is high at Vicarage Road. You're after a first victory of the season and now a new manager. We've got that manager bounce and now you play Man City.
Yeah, it's well, and there's never a good time to play Man City, is it? And I think certainly after their first defeat of the season, they're out for revenge. So it's I wouldn't fancy anyone facing Man City next weekend, and sadly for me, that happens to be Watford. But we've kind of with that draw yesterday, obviously coming back from two goals down, we've got a bit of confidence, bit of positivity, and you know, there's no reason. We don't go there expecting anything. And so it's, you know, old cliche of a bit of a free hit, really. It's sort of almost a pre-season game for Kike, if you like, just to try out new formations, try out different players, improve fitness, etc. So not expecting anything, but yeah, it's Man City.
We played each other recently, didn't we, at Wembley, I think. Andy, how are you?
No, don't recall that at all. That's a myth.
Yeah, no, okay. Maybe it's a pigment of my imagination. Maybe it didn't happen, Andy. I think Vincent Kompany might have mentioned something to Troy Deeney on the way past. I think he mentioned it to him, didn't he, during the game? I think he apologised, didn't he, during the game?
I think he did, yeah. It was that was my one and only FA Cup final, and sadly quite a forgettable 90 minutes. Everything else about the day for us was excellent, but you weren't very kind to us. That's fair.
but looking forward, in all seriousness, so this weekend, so new manager, you come back from 2-0 down in your last game. We've kind of lost for the first time in 8 months. It could be set up for, we've had a trip abroad as well, so we could have an exhausting trip to the Ukraine this week, midweek as well, to contend with. It could well be actually a good time to play City, potentially, you could argue.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, Kike's thus far only had a week to sort of settle in. He knows what the squad's about already. He knows what the club's about. And the game yesterday was fantastic and just gave him a sense of what this squad can actually achieve and how we can play. And if we bring that intensity that we managed to provide in the second half against Arsenal up to the Etihad next week, you know, there's every reason Watford could potentially get something. We obviously have to catch City on an off day like you had against Norwich, and if that happens, then you know, City have been beaten by smaller clubs like Crystal Palace at the Etihad in recent seasons. You know, there's no point writing off Watford. But it's a monumental task, but we have to remain positive. And even if we do lose, which is obviously quite likely, we kind of just want to see a performance again, because we're still trying to build a foundation after our poor start to the season.
And what should City be most worried about? Where do you think your big strengths lie, and where's your biggest opportunity to beat City?
So I think our wing play against Arsenal was excellent. I think that's something that Kike wants to improve on. Ismail Assar is our new sort of record signing over the summer. He came on for the final sort of 15 minutes against Arsenal. I hope he'll be given some more time against Manchester City. You know, we've got the likes of Delefe, who was exceptional yesterday against Arsenal. I mean, most of the squad were, in fairness. Their work rate and their sort of creativity, they're not afraid to take players on. They're not afraid to get the ball turned and run at the defence, and that's something that we'll need to do against Man City. You know, we know we can't defend very well. So our strengths lie in being able to attack. And if we get on the front foot, we can certainly build some momentum. And I think, realistically, if we winning the midfield battle for us is going to be so crucial, because we saw yesterday Kike opted to have Doucouré and Kapu in sort of holding, and then Tom Cleverley sort of sitting behind the front two, which gave us quite a strong central three. And if Watford are able to control that midfield, then we could potentially get a grasp on the game.
And what are you most worried about, finally, from me, in terms of City's threat? Where do you see that coming from? What worries you most about the mighty Manchester City?
I am absolutely terrified about Raheem Sterling running at Craig Dawson. I've been waking up in a cold sweat throughout the weeks, just picturing Aguero and Sterling running at our defence, because obviously we haven't had the best start to the season. But that's why Kike's come in. You know, he's a slightly more defensive-minded coach. But I think someone of Sterling's quality running at our back line, which isn't very agile, isn't very quick, it is worrying. So we've got to defend in numbers, I think. Don't be surprised if we've put two, maybe even three players on Sterling on Saturday.
Andy, before you go, I don't want to break the news, but I'm going to have to. 30 years since you last beat Manchester City, 4th of March 1989. Prediction on Saturday?
Thanks for that, Matt.
Sorry, mate.
I wasn't even born. I never predict a Watford loss. So a one-all draw, Matt.
Lovely stuff. Andy, thank you very much for joining us.
Thanks, Matt.
That was Andy Lewis of the Hornets Nest podcast. Of course, he appears on the Watford Fan Show on Love Sport Sunday at 7 p.m. That game, Nigel, 4th of March 1989, the last time Watford beat Manchester City. Do you remember it?
No, I don't. Is the honest answer, I don't remember that, no.
That was, of course, the 88-89 season, where you were quite close in the league. It was at Vicarage Road. Ewan Thomas scored for Watford. Ewan Roberts, sorry, Ewan Thomas is a Love Sport presenter and an athlete. If you're listening, Ewan, sorry. I do that all the time, actually. I actually always mix them up. Ewan Roberts scored for Watford, in goal for Watford that day. A tremendous performance.
You asked me about a Watford player now.
Yep.
Tony Coton.
Tony Coton is correct, Mr. Rothman. That
there.
Came from absolutely
I
nowhere.
Came from nowhere. A Manchester City legend.
Absolutely, yes. He obviously joined the club the following season, yep. In fact, in that 89-90 season.
I'm pleased for that.
Good. First quiz. I like to chuck in a quiz question in every show, and you succeeded in that first one. Right, before we go, your thoughts on the Watford game?
Listen, they've not had a great start to the season. We've not had a great weekend. We've got to travel abroad. Similar to Andy, I'm not going to say the City are going to lose. I think there could be a bit of a bounce back here. I'm going for a 3-0 City victory.
3-0 to Manchester City. A bounce back from that 3-2 defeat that we're not going to talk about last weekend. This has been the Manchester City Fan Show on Love Sport. Nigel, thank you for joining me.
Great pleasure. Great to be here.
We will be back here next week at the same time, 9 p.m. on Monday. We'll see you then.
Thanks for downloading this podcast from Love Sport Radio. For more, go to lovesportradio.com for all the latest podcasts, news and views. Or for more, follow us at Love Sport Radio on Twitter.